Radio EcoShock.
To explain this worrying new sea ice science, we are joined by co-author Dr. Dirk Notz. Professor Notz leads the sea ice program at the University of Hamburg. He is deputy managing director for the University Institute of Oceanography and a longtime specialist in the field. From Hamburg, Dirk Notz, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Hello, it's good to hear you.
Well, very seldom do scientists say it's too late. How did your team come to that conclusion about saving summer sea ice in the Arctic?
Well, it's been a kind of frustrating experience looking into Arctic sea ice over the past, say, 10, 15 years that I've been working in the field, because the ice has been dwindling more and more and more. And basically, since decades, scientists have predicted at some point it will be gone. And what we've now found in this new study is that realistically, in every emission scenario that we think could potentially unfold over the next years, the Arctic sea ice will disappear at least in some summers. So it's certainly not too late to save the ice from disappearing in all summers. For that, we need a lot of emissions. But it seems to be impossible realistically to avoid to have occasional ice-free summers at some point between 2030 and 2050.
In its 2021 report, the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change predicted sea ice would, quote, be practically ice-free near mid-century under intermediate and high greenhouse gas emission scenarios. What does your new study find, and what in your approach makes a difference?
Yeah, so the quote from the IPCC report that you just quoted, that goes back to looking at the climate model simulations directly. So for every IPCC report, there's a dedicated set of climate model simulations being carried out. And those are then being analyzed in order to understand what will happen in the future in every aspect of our climate system. But I should say already, when writing the IPCC report, we were aware of the fact that these models were losing their ice too slowly, in particular relative to global warming. So in the real world, in the observational record that we have, we lose about 4 million square kilometers of Arctic sea ice per 1 degree of global warming. But in many of the models, we lose much less sea ice per degree of global warming. So we knew already then that the models were losing their ice too slowly. And so what we did in the IPCC report was to try and correct for these issues in a sort of ad hoc way by just selecting a few models and using linear extrapolations, etc., which made us also make this statement in this sort of more specialized chapter of the IPCC report to say that we are pretty certain that the ice will be lost in some summers before 2050 in every scenario. But what is now new in this study, that we found a way to correct the bias in the model simulations by comparing their past simulation of the sea ice record to what we have observed. And by then analyzing how quickly the models lose their ice, how quickly it was lost in reality, we were able to then bias correct also the future simulations of the sea ice cover. And this then gives us much more confidence that this time period 2030 to 2050 really is the most likely one for the first ice-free summer in the Arctic.
Why does it matter if the Arctic Ocean becomes open sea sooner, like in the 2030s instead of 2050 or even 2070 as they used to predict?
Well, I guess it does matter because it shows us how quickly climate change is unfolding. And it also means that almost every person who's alive on this planet today is quite likely to witness an ice-free Arctic throughout their lifetime. And I feel that that one of the problems really in reacting to climate change is that many of the major impacts seem quite remote, either geographically or temporally in time. And so the fact that something will happen in the 2030s, I think really increases the feeling of urgency also when it comes to taking action towards stopping global warming.
Dr. Notz, will an ice-free summer in the Arctic Sea lead to more global warming itself? Is it a positive feedback effect?
it will lead to more warming, certainly in the Arctic, which is what we term Arctic amplification, the fact that the Arctic is warming more rapidly than other parts of the planet, because the sea ice is a huge sunlight mirror, one could say. And so in summer, when the sunlight is, when the sun is in the sky for 24 hours, much of that sunlight that hits the surface in the Arctic is being reflected back to space by the sea ice cover. And now this sunlight mirror is becoming smaller and smaller and smaller and might eventually disappear. And so more and more and more sunlight stays in the system and heats the Arctic. And that is one of the reasons why the Arctic is heating up more than other parts of the planet. But it's not really a very strong feedback in the sense that this, what scientists call the ice albedo feedback loop, isn't particularly strong when it comes to the loss of Arctic sea ice. So there have, say some 10, 15 years ago, there has been this worry that we might lose Arctic sea ice cover unstoppably, simply because we have less ice, more absorption of sunlight, warmer water means less ice, more absorption of sunlight. But this vicious circle is broken every winter. And so it only works in summer when the sun is up in the sky. But in winter, there's a, there are feedbacks going the other way around. And this basically stabilizes the sea ice cover to a degree that the loss of sea ice is largely linear relative to both global temperature and to greenhouse gas emissions by us humans, and that there isn't any self-acceleration.
That's a bit of a relief to hear. Now, if it does rebuild every winter, but if there's a summer where it can't build on previous ice because that melted, wouldn't the ice be thinner?
Exactly. And so in the future, with a complete loss of summer sea ice, the ice will be thinner. But I should say that much of these, many of these changes in the Arctic have already been unfolding over the past, say, 20, 30 years. So if you look at a map of the age of the sea ice cover in the Arctic in the mid-1980s, you would find that back then about half of the sea ice was more than 4 years old. So it was circulating in the Arctic Ocean for a couple of years, getting thicker and thicker. The salt would drain out of the ice, and you would get this almost fresh ice near the surface that expeditions could then use to produce their meltwater, their drinking water. But if you look at a map of sea ice age today, you will find that almost all this ice that is like 4 or 3 years old is gone. So already now the sea ice cover in the Arctic is very much younger than it used to be. And this this trend will simply continue over the coming years.
Even later this century, though, some scientists expect pockets of sea ice to hang on, say, around the Canadian archipelago. What is the technical definition of an ice-free Arctic?
Yes, so what the wording that we've been using for the IPCC report, and that I think is a good description, is that we call our findings practically sea ice free, and we use a threshold of less than 1 million square kilometer of sea ice, and that is about 10 to 15% of the initial sea ice cover, and this last ice, as you say, will be found at the northern edges of Greenland, some bays in northern Canada. But it's sort of the Arctic Ocean itself is practically ice-free. Say if you want to go to the North Pole with a ship, you wouldn't find ice floes. If you look at the ecosystem side of things, much of the Arctic will be ice-free and not support any ecosystem that needs sea ice. And so therefore we think it's useful to have this definition of a practically ice-free Arctic Ocean once the sea ice cover drops below 1 million square kilometers.
It's pretty amazing. I mean, just during my single lifetime, what was always frozen has become an open ocean at times, stretching 1,500 miles or 2,400 kilometers from Canada all the way to Russia. Do you find that mind-boggling?
I absolutely do. And I think, for me, that might be one of the most important impacts of our finding, namely that we're basically communicating that we are losing an entire landscape. And somehow there seems to be something deep within us humans that connects us to this landscape. So I sometimes give talks in kindergartens or preschools or with kids like 4, 5, 6 years old. And when I show them pictures from the Arctic, from my expeditions there, they are absolutely amazed. They are like, are you really going to these places? Have you seen polar bears? And there seems to be something incredibly fascinating about these landscapes rooted deeply within us. And the fact that we are basically making this entire landscape disappear, at least in some summers initially, means that we are losing this kind of fascinating landscape. And somehow I expect this will do something with how we perceive this planet, that the Arctic in the future is just an open ocean like every other. And it really changes, in some sense, I think, our view of this world.
So when was the last time the Arctic was more or less ice-free? Has it been frozen during all the time of Homo sapiens, even during our evolution?
It was probably ice-covered for much of our evolution, if you take the last, say, 200,000 years, because the Arctic has been comparatively cold for the past 4 or 5 million years, also during which time the Greenland ice sheet was building up. And so certainly since humans have existed in, say, Europe, the U.S., Canada, the Arctic was ice-covered all year round.
Is it conceivable most of the Arctic Ocean could be ice-free year-round, and do we know what amount of warming it would take to do that?
That is much more uncertain compared to predicting when the ice might be gone in summer, because the climate models, even though they disagree for the summer timing, they disagree even more for the loss of the winter sea ice. But what they all agree on is that we do need substantially more warming than, say, 2 or 2.5 degrees, or 2 degrees as set by the Paris Protocol. But it is, of course, possible that given sufficient warming, the Arctic might eventually become ice-free all year round. In terms of timing, most climate models only see this happening at some point, say, early next century.
Dirk Knotts, does the lack of summer sea ice alter weather patterns or currents of wind or oceans further south?
I think the jury on that one is still open. There are a couple of studies that have suggested that this is the case, and if you take a climate model and you keep everything else constant and you just remove the ice cover, you do see a signal in weather patterns. But a number of other studies have found that in reality the signal is too small to be really visible in all the noise of weather patterns and jet stream wiggles that we usually have anyways. And so there might be some impact, but there many studies have shown that this impact might not stand out from the noise. And so when looking at this in the last IPCC report, we basically said that we have low confidence in our understanding and in the certainty that we really will see a measurable impact of these changes on our weather.
And has seasonally disappearing sea ice contributed to the global trend of ocean warming? We see hotter oceans in the Atlantic and the North Pacific. Will the Arctic Ocean warm, and do those waters interact with that great conveyor belt that adds heat to other oceans?
Yes, the Arctic Ocean certainly is warming because, like physically, as long as you have ice in contact with seawater, the ice is sort of trying to keep the seawater at freezing temperature. But now with longer and longer ice-free periods in larger and larger parts of the ocean, the average temperature of the Arctic Ocean is certainly rising just now. And we also see more what we call marine heat waves. And so basically temperature patterns in the Arctic Ocean that stand out from the internal variability or natural variability of ocean temperatures. However, the connection between the Arctic Ocean and the rest of the world's ocean isn't particularly strong when it comes to its temperature. More important, however, is the freshwater export from the Arctic into the Fram Strait, into the region east of Greenland and around Greenland, because there a lot of so-called deep water is being formed. And so only in the polar regions does the seawater become so dense, because it's both cold and salty, that it can sink all the way to the seafloor and then from there spread over all the world's ocean near the bottom. And this sinking of the ocean water near Greenland is very sensitive to how much fresh water there is around. And with more melting of sea ice, with more inflow from large rivers into the Arctic Ocean is freshening. And thus, this might contribute to a bit of the weakening of the ocean circulation that we are expecting in the North Atlantic throughout the century.
But that's the ocean circulation that keeps Germany and England much warmer than they would be for the latitude where you are.
Indeed. So we're not expecting this circulation to break down altogether. We expect probably a weakening of about 30%. There is a small chance that it might collapse the circulation, because also their models have problems in reproducing the processes that we think are really important, which also means that you look at maps of global warming. The global warming is often weakest in the North Atlantic because you reduce the inflow of warm water from further south with the slowdown of this ocean circulation. So we still have warming everywhere. It's just somewhat weaker, potentially in the North Atlantic and then maybe in Ireland and Iceland.
Do we really know all the ramifications of early sea ice loss in the Arctic? Could this trigger a system elsewhere on the planet? Are there teleconnections with things like rainfall in the Amazon or wildfires in North America?
I would be surprised if we would find anything like that, because for the climate system, there isn't anything particularly special about even losing the last ice floe in the Arctic, because for the climate system, we have already lost half of the sea ice cover in the Arctic. And one could imagine that the impact of this first half is roughly equally large as losing the second half as well. There could, of course, be surprises, but because of the jet stream and other phenomena, the Arctic is a bit isolated from the rest of our planet, both in terms of its connection to the world's ocean, but also in the atmosphere, where we certainly do have connections, but I personally do not expect any major impacts from this loss of summer sea ice on sort of the major weather patterns that we have further south. There is, of course, this possibility, but we have relatively weak evidence in that direction.
You're listening to EcoShock Radio for the world.
I'm Alex Smith. Get it all at our website, ecoshock.org.
This is Radio EcoShock with your host, Alex Smith.
Arctic sea ice may disappear in summer in the next 10 years. Alex talks with ice expert Dirk Knotts from the University of Hamburg.
Your team doesn't suggest we try to save the sea ice with geoengineering, like blasting sulfur into the stratosphere over the far north. Why not?
We haven't really looked into sort of ways of potentially saving the ice, and I'm certainly not an expert on geoengineering. And my take on geoengineering is that much of that, whether we do it or whether we don't do it, at the end of the day, will be a societal decision. But the problem that I know with many of the geoengineering methods suggested is that they usually have adverse side effects, negative side effects, and at least some other parts maybe of the planet. And so at the end, deciding as to how we potentially might change the climate or how we want to affect the climate will be politically extremely difficult to sort out. And so even if we were to stabilize the global mean temperature by putting solar mirrors into the space, it would be a different climate in many regions of the world. Even the average it would be the same. So in that sense, I think we are currently doing geoengineering in the sense of putting a lot of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere and by that way changing the climate through technical methods. And I think the only technique that we can agree on that would make sense would be to reverse this geoengineering that we are currently carrying out by putting greenhouse gases into the atmosphere by trying to remove them again and store them at somewhere underground, for example.
And the new study says the early arrival of a seasonally open Arctic sea means humanity needs to plan and to adapt to a new reality. What plans could we make? How could we adapt?
Well, I guess the primary impacts of an ice-free Arctic Ocean will be for the people who live in the Arctic, but many of them are already adjusting to the new reality of having much longer ice-free periods in summer, having winters where ice might not form where it used to form. For example, in Greenland, I've talked to some of the hunters there who told me that they are not using their dog sledges anymore because there's no safe sea ice to travel on anymore. So they just go fishing all winter round. And so in that sense, they are already adapting. But of course, given the current tensions that we have, the fact that suddenly in the Arctic, the states that border the Arctic, including Russia, including the U.S. with Alaska, including Canada, including the European countries, if there suddenly is completely open water in summer, it of course means that there is much easier connection also between these countries. And I guess also in that direction, there already is a lot of planning happening that we probably don't know about.
You know, it seems to me this paper in Nature is part of a newer process I'm seeing in science. In the 1990s, we did not have enough data, so scientists depended heavily on climate models alone. With three decades under our belts and more sophisticated sensors, there is a better chance to compare model results with the observed record. And that's really what you've done in this paper, isn't it? Do you see it as a change in climate science?
Yes, absolutely. Also with some of the earlier studies that I've been involved in, where we found a very, very clear linear relationship between the Arctic sea ice cover and the CO2 emissions, which allowed us to calculate that for each ton of CO2, metric ton of CO2 that a person emits, about 3 square meters of Arctic sea ice disappear. That number and that finding was primarily based on the observational record. And so the only information we took from the climate models for this study was the fact that this linearity also exists in every climate model and basically will be kept up until all the ice is gone. So we basically can extrapolate the observed record into the future to get some estimate of when the Arctic will be ice-free. And the fact that we now have a much longer record also means that we can much clearer identify those models that really have problems when simulating Arctic sea ice and those that seem to do an okay job. Because, of course, always when it comes to analyzing model simulations, we do have the large problem of internal variability, chaotic changes in the climate system that happen on top of the very clear signal of anthropogenic warming that we, of course, identify in every model simulation.
You have been researching sea ice for more than a decade, publishing many papers. What do you think is left to be done?
Well, I think from my perspective, the real big questions when it comes to sea ice research currently are emerging in the Southern Ocean. Because in the Southern Ocean, we have a situation that we there have a lot of sea ice in winter and very little in summer. And so in some sense, the Arctic is getting more like the Antarctic in the sense of having very, very little ice in summer and still a lot in winter. But the models are doing a terrible job in some sense to project what is happening there. So, for example, we had no real ice loss in the Antarctic, which we think is connected to the fact that in the Antarctic, the amount of sea ice area that we have, it's much closer linked to the wind patterns that we have compared to the Arctic. Because in the Arctic, the ice is landlocked, so it can't go anywhere no matter how the winds blow. And so in the Arctic, the amount of sea ice primarily depends on the freezing and melting in the central Arctic Ocean or in the Arctic Ocean itself. But in the Southern Ocean, the winds that blow from the continent, from the Antarctic continent that sits on the South Pole towards north, distributes the Arctic sea ice on the surface of the ocean. And so the amount of sea ice area that we have in the Southern Ocean is much more driven by changes in the wind patterns. And we believe that some of the fact that we have lost very little ice in the Southern Ocean so far has been related to the potential increase of these winds. But now over the past few years, we've seen a strong negative trend of Southern Ocean sea ice coverage. And it is currently unclear if that's sort of just a hiccup in the climate system and that we will go back to the sea ice that we've had before, or whether that's really is the beginning of a real trend in Southern Ocean sea ice. And the problem why we've not been able to simulate sea ice particularly well in the Southern Ocean is that many of the processes there depend on what the ocean does. And the Southern Ocean is characterized by its large amount of small-scale ocean eddies that we couldn't resolve in earlier generations of climate models. But now we are developing higher and higher resolved, spatially resolved climate models. And so it now starts to become possible to also get faithful simulations of the Southern Ocean.
From the Institute of Oceanography at Hamburg University, we've been speaking with sea ice specialist Professor Dirk Nauts. He is co-author of Breaking Science, published in the journal Nature Communications. The title is Observationally Constrained Projections of an Ice-Free Arctic, Even Under a Low Emission Scenario. Find links to that open access paper in my show blog at ecoshock.org. Dirk Nauts, thank you for sharing your valuable time with our listeners.
Thank you very much. It's been a pleasure.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock.
Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.